Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon. Happy Thursday. It is Joe Beamer here at News Radio 930 WBEN. Happy to be with you. We've got a packed show for you today on News Radio 930 WBEN. This computer, oh, there it is. The screensaver was bothering me. Anyway, we'll be joined by Professor Peter Iacobucci in mere seconds as we ask him a few questions that I had. And, you know, I usually don't assume that, I assume people understand things better than me sometimes, but this is when I think people had the same questions, and we're going to get some answers from Professor Peter Iacobucci off the top here. And then want to ask a question I was going to ask yesterday as we're back in school, back in the rhythm of the school season. Is college worth it? And I want to talk with those of you who went to college and those who didn't go to college. Is there anything you do differently? Do you feel the same way? Do you feel it was important? So we'll talk about that later on in the show. And America's health. It's obviously in the spotlight right now with RFK on Capitol Hill. There's a study out that says your favorite sports team could age you. And I actually think they could be wrong. I am not a doctor, but I would say not having my favorite sports team would age me more than the stress of my sports team. We'll get to that later on the show. But we are happy to be joined by someone I've talked to many times on Hardline, but I do believe this is the debut of Professor Peter Iacobucci on the Joe Beamer Show. Professor, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Doing all right, Professor. Before we get to the questions of D.C. and the courts, back to school, back to college. How's the first few days going?
I have more students this semester than I've ever had in the past, which is a really good thing, and they've been really attentive. They've been excellent. I should put the caveat in there. I haven't really asked them to do anything hard yet, so we'll see when the first major assignment comes up.
I always loved the first week of school, Professor, because that was the syllabus and the supplies you got to go out and get.
That's about right.
Hey, so we talked a few weeks ago after the Supreme Court rulings over a lot of stuff, but one of the ones that stuck out to me was the lower courts and pretty much saying that the lower courts cannot stop the, or how I understood it, the lower courts could not stop the administration. However, we're hearing things like this out of Newsweek. You know, Donald Trump suffers big legal blow over migrant deportations, talking about something that was blocked in a federal appeals court. So, Professor, how are things like this still going on?
Well, part of it is, and when SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, come back into session, which will be in the first week of October, really the emphasis of this session, at least the first half of it, is going to be, can he do that? And because the Trump presidency, and not just the first presidency, but his second term, has pushed the boundaries of executive power beyond anything we've ever seen in the past. And so, for example, the president is using, let me look up the International Emergencies Economic Powers Act as justification. That's a law passed in 1977 as justification to impose tariffs around the world. It's never been used in that way before. And so these are new, unique questions that are going to come before the Supreme Court.
Now, these decisions, like in Los Angeles, right? Governor Newsom was saying that it was a win for the state of California. Is that something that still has to be held up by the Supreme Court? And until they're in session, that lower court ruling stands?
Well, two things about that. The Supreme Court gets to largely almost all of its cases. It gets to decide whether to take the case or not. If it doesn't take the case, that means whatever the lower court ruling is stands, right? Or the other option that the Supreme Court could have besides taking the case is they could impose an injunction on that ruling and simply hold the ruling and say, well, no, that ruling we're going to set aside for, and then until the Supreme Court actually rules on the case, it goes back to the way it was prior to the ruling.
So this ruling that says the court that there can't be deportations from Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, that is that holds until the Supreme Court hears it, or it can hold indefinitely.
Well, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe the Trump administration has immediately filed for a temporary pause of that ruling to the Supreme Court. That's the so-called shadow docket. The court has emergency rulings. It's up to the court whether to decide to take up the Trump administration on that and say, no, okay, we're going to hold off on this ruling, or they can simply just let the ruling stand, and then they have to decide at a later time whether or not they want to actually hear the case.
So this is where my misunderstanding is, because there was a ruling about lower courts. So how is this different than what the Supreme Court ruled on toward the end of the last session?
So all of these, all the issues that we're talking about, whether it's tariffs or immigration or removal of federal officials or just a lot of things that the Trump administration have done, all of them are based on some statute that has been passed by Congress and then enacted into law, right? So each of those statutes have different terms and different limits to them. And so each has to be litigated separately. It's not like we can just say Trump has the power to do this in all these areas at once.
Okay. Understood. Now, on that tariffs, you mentioned that's going to be the one that we're all going to be looking out for when they get back into session. Is this the type of thing where maybe the judges don't vote along their conservative / liberal line?
Well, and interesting, I was in a conversation with a colleague yesterday about what's going to happen with the tariff cases. And there's a lot of legal scholars that think Trump is pushing the law that he's basing these tariffs on well beyond what was intended in the original intent of the law. This was designed, the intent of the law, clearly to be an action that occurs during clear emergency situations or wartime situations, and that's not what we're in. But the other side of that is the court, since Trump has retaken the presidency, he almost has a perfect record in these shadow docket cases, these emergency cases. So there's sort of two thoughts here. Where one is, this is clearly a major question and falls under the major questions doctrine, which says, look, this is something that Congress should be deciding, and the president unilaterally can't simply decide to do this. If these are tariffs that we want, he should come before Congress and get Congress to pass a law or amend a law to allow the tariffs. The other side is, or the court can just say, well, we're going to decide on ancillary or extra areas dealing with this, not the main question, and sort of, you know, kick the can down the road until beyond the 2026 election, even beyond the 2028 election. And then that way they don't have to resolve it exclusively, the main legal question.
Now, yeah, so this tariff thing, it could be separate rulings per, could it be separate rulings per tariff, I guess is what I'm asking. Could they say some tariffs didn't go beyond and some did, and then Trump would have to go to Congress, or is this going to be pretty black and white?
Well, it could be. It could be separate. I mean, as I understand it, the Trump administration is basing the authority for these tariffs on declaring that this is an emergency to the United States, and it threatens either its foreign policy or its national security, right? In some cases, that seems like a logical argument. If it's a tariff against, let's say, a military equipment or technology involved in military equipment, that would certainly affect national security. But if it's a tariff on, I don't know, wine coming out of Italy, I don't know how that affects national security, especially a tariff applied to a country that's our ally, right? That doesn't seem to relate to the national security of the United States. And I could see the court saying, wait a minute, in that situation, this is clearly not a national emergency. So therefore, the provisions of the law don't apply.
Now, you know, a lot of talk about these the tariff and the administration asking the Supreme Court to do this, you know, ASAP when they get back into session. But is there anything else, Professor, that you think will be decided pretty quickly by the Supreme Court that will be of importance?
Well, as I said, almost all of its emergency rulings since Trump retook the presidency have been in favor with the president. And if you try and find a narrative through all the opinions that have been written by the Chief Justice. And the Chief Justice, John Roberts, has written the majority opinion on most of these either emergency docket opinions, if an opinion has been given, or on the actual fully argued opinions. He is very expansive on the power that he's willing to give to the president. And if you look at through his 20 years on the court, almost always when the president comes before the court and says, I have the power to do this, John Roberts agrees with him. And now, can he line up five other members of the court, or I'm sorry, four other members of the court to make the majority five? That's the question. But it looks like there is a very favorable bench to President Trump on expanding the power of the presidency.
But this is also the kind of thing where, I mean, if you're a Republican who's not Donald Trump, I mean, the long game of this, I mean, very well, a Democrat could get back in the office in 28 and take advantage for Democratic policies with some of the rulings that Trump's getting, correct?
Well, and that's right. And that's where critics of the court have said, boy, this court is being really hypocritical, because when Biden was president, this court struck down, probably most famously, his cancellation, many of the cancellations of student loans. And what they said is the Biden administration is going beyond the authority of the president. This is a major question. This should be decided by Congress. Certainly, the application of tariffs around the world is as important as the cancellation of student loans. Is that a major question? If the court wants to be consistent, it should say, well, you can't put the tariffs on. You got to go to Congress and get the tariffs explicitly approved, especially because the power to impose tariffs is explicitly given to Congress in the Constitution, in Article 1 of the Constitution. Now, whether the court will, you know, sort of go the same way that it did under Biden, I don't know. But if it doesn't, it's certainly going to be accused of making decisions not based on the letter of the law or the philosophy of the law, but making decisions based on who the president is.
Do you think this term is the one we see a conservative justice step down so President Trump can replace them?
Let me say this two ways, right? Imagine you're working your job and you've been at your job for either 10 years, 20 years, or even 30 years in the case of Clarence Thomas, and you have finally gotten to the apex. You are ruling, your opinions are held in the majority. Would you want to step away from that? And this is the same problem that the Democrats have had in the past, where they've had justices that if you're looking at the court and you're trying to time retirements based on political considerations, right, you may overstep, right? So there's nothing that I have seen that indicates any member of the conservative wing of the court is ready to step down yet, right? Give it to 2027, right? And after the midterm election, right, then you might see, if the Republicans hold on to the Senate, you may see one of the older members of the court, Clarence Thomas, or even John Roberts or Sam Alito, step down.
That's taking a risk, though, with the midterms ahead.
Yeah, it's just the same. I mean, look, that's exactly what happened when Merrick Garland was going to be put on the court to replace Scalia. It was everybody, you know, the the wise political minds thought that Hillary Clinton was going to be Trump. So you didn't really have to rush that through. Well, we know that didn't happen. And, you know, immediately Merrick Garland's name gets pulled. So the Republicans could be taking a risk. But again, it's up to each individual justice. And again, I'm not seeing anything from any of those four three conservatives that I mentioned suggesting that they're ready to step down.
Now, Professor, as we step out of the court for a second and look at the two political parties, usually when one is in the White House, the other party that's out of power gains favorability. Yet, as unpopular as the president may be, it seems that the Democrat Party as a whole is sinking more and more unpopular, according to a Wall Street Journal poll. If they came to you, Professor Peter Iacobucci, and said, what can we do to work on our popularity and our favorability, what would your advice be to today's Democratic Party?
First, they would never come to me, but I appreciate the question. Look, the Democratic Party has a major, major image problem, right? And their image is weakness, right? One thing, love or hate Donald Trump, he projects strength, right? And forcefulness and aggressiveness. The Democratic Party is completely opposite. And in American culture, strength wins. And so my advice to them is you need to start being much stronger. A perfect example is the governor of California. You might not like his mocking of Trump and sending out tweets that mimic the way Trump tweets on Truth Social, but they're effective and they show a fight. Right. The other problem the Democrats have, they've gotten really old. The leadership has gotten very, very old. Chuck Schumer is elderly. Jerry Nadler, who just decided he's not going to run again, he's in his 80s. Right. They need to allow the younger generation to rise to the top and to begin to take those leadership positions. And so far, they've not, at least that I've seen, they've not been willing to do it.
Isn't that amazing? Because, you know, I mean, the Republicans have always been referred to as the boomer party. And it's not like a lot of people on the Republican side in power are young. But I mean, it does seem that the Democrat Party, the progressive party on college campuses, outside of college campuses, it's a pretty old party.
Well, and look at the protests that have been going on about the Trump administration. Right. If you look at the individuals that are out there on the street, that are out there protesting the tariffs or the deportations or any of the actions of Trump, almost everyone you see is over 60 years old and Caucasian, right? That's a problem for the Democrats, right? If they're going to win in the future as a party, they have to maintain the youth vote, but they also have to get a higher percentage of individuals between the ages of 40 and 70. They're just not getting enough of those individuals to come out and vote for them. And as you mentioned with the Wall Street poll, it's not that Americans are in favor of Republicans. The Republican support is also tanked, but the Democratic support is really at its lowest level that I ever remember it being.
Does this mean a third party could finally arise?
Well, for those people that want a third party, I will just tell you the structure of how our government is structured with the first-past-the-post winner system makes it almost impossible for a third party to rise up and supplant one of the other parties. We've had the Democrats or the Republicans since essentially the Civil War. That's 175 years of those two parties as the dominant parties within our system. They have the advantage. The advantage is written right into many constitutions and many laws, right? And the idea that a third party would be able to rise up and supplant them is just not likely. Look at Elon Musk's effort a few months ago. That died immediately. It went nowhere. And obviously, Elon Musk has the money to fund it, but it went nowhere.
Professor, final question. I meant for that to be my final question, but I forgot to ask you this one earlier. The Trump administration and the National Guard, D.C. is suing the Trump administration this coming down at 11:35 a.m., what legality does the administration have and what position or what legality does D.C. have over this issue?
Well, this is it, in a way, it's similar to the tariffs, although it's using different laws. Right. What is the Trump administration is claiming is there is emergency in American cities, starting with D.C., possibly Chicago and, of course, Los Angeles. Right. And we need to send in the National Guard to handle this emergency. The problem is that there really, you know, there isn't an emergency. Crime in those cities is down. It's still high, right? But crime certainly is not at its highest level it's ever been, right? So that's the legal question, is this emergency or not? And if it's not an emergency, how can we be sending in the National Guard?
Professor Peter Iacobucci, professor, as always, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Go Bills.
Go Bills. That is Professor Peter Iacobucci from Buff State. When we come back, if you had anything you wanted to comment on what the professor said, let me know. 803-0930, star 930. And he's a professor, and we're talking about college after the break, asking you, looking back or looking forward, was college worth it? Talking about all that and much more. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back. She had to get out. I had a playlist going last night, and this song came on. Now, I love The Offspring, right? And I would say anything before 2000 was great. In 99, my mom hit a deer. No. I think she hit a deer with the family car, and we had to rent a car to go to my cousin's wedding in Delaware. And Offspring Americana got left behind in the rental car. Great album. Here's the thing. That song, Hit That, is from 2003. I think Offspring kind of fell off after 2000, let's be honest. But of their post-Americana album stuff, I would say that's probably the best song. Again, post-Americana. Americana was a great album. They had Pretty Fly for a White Guy. Yeah, Tanner knows what I'm talking about. Great album. Anyway. Joe Beamer here with you on News Radio 930 WBEN. Thank you to Professor Peter Iacobucci for joining us and giving us what the courts are allowed to do and what they can't do. And again, what to look forward to in October with the Supreme Court. And, you know, I mean, to the professor's point, yes, crime is down in major cities. It is still, in my opinion, and, you know, we're allowed to have different opinions. In my opinion, it is still too high. And, you know, as I continue to play you the clips from Chicago, Washington, you know, there are residents in Chicago saying they would welcome the National Guard and they would welcome the help from the federal government. And people in Washington saying they feel safer to go downtown. I mean, there's multiple interviews with people saying, you know, forget politics. I want to feel safe in my home city. But As always, appreciate the professor. And if you have any comments on anything he said, 803-0930, star 930. Obviously, would love to hear from you, the amazing WBEN audience. And if I don't thank you enough, I apologize, because if it weren't for the WBEN audience, I would, like I said on National Radio Day, I'd be probably working a job that I could not stand. So thank you, each and every one of you, for allowing me to do what it is I love doing. Now, this is something that I seemingly circle back to when we get back to school. And speaking with Professor Iacobucci made me think of college. Now, I, as you probably could tell, loved college. Learning had very little to do with why I loved college. Now, I will tell you this. I love the fact that my professors, got me a job here that I was able to then work my way to where I am today, 16 years later. If it weren't for my schooling, I probably never would have gotten my foot in the door. So I do thank my college that is no longer with us, but I thank the great people there for getting me the opportunity to prove myself here. Again, I would never have, been working Saturday night board hopping if it weren't for people like Lou Pazentitas at Medai, right? So I want to thank them, and I loved my communication classes, right? I mean, I took Joanna Passeri's class. It was great. I learned from some of the best to ever do it, and I love that for what I wanted to do. So I've always made this point. I don't know if I would have gotten in the door if it weren't for college, but I definitely believe, and I know people will push back on this, and it doesn't discount anything that I learned or did at Medai. I definitely think I could do this job without ever stepping foot in a college classroom. Does that make sense? Like, I thank Medai College each and every day for getting me here, because literally they got me the job interview. But I think I could do what I do without ever stepping foot in a college classroom. But that's just one job. There are a lot of jobs out there. And obviously there are jobs where you have to go to college, right? I mean, there is, you need college if you're going to be a doctor. You need lots of college. An attorney, right? But for everyone, is college necessary? And if you went to college, if you could go back and be 18 again, would you still decide to go down that path? 803-0930, star 930. Now, I loved the social aspect of college, right? The partying, the friends I made. I mean, I'm still good friends with a lot of people I went to college with. Like, I loved that. That was awesome. You do learn a lot of life lessons in college. But the what you're actually paying for, well, I guess you're paying for the dorms, but for the schooling, is it worth it? Now, Pew Research literally asked that question a year ago. Is college worth it? As economic outcomes for young adults with and without degrees have improved, Americans hold mixed views on the value of college. So, let's go to this. Only 1 in 4 U.S. adults say it's extremely or very important to have a 4-year college degree in order to get a well-paying job in today's economy. 1 in 4. About a third say a college degree is somewhat important, while 40% say it's not too or not at all important. I mean, I will point to, again, keeping it in this industry, a lot of the greats in this industry, right? They went right to they went right to a radio station, right? Or they worked a production job, or they got their foot in the door. And they prove themselves. I mean, regardless, college or not, you have to prove yourself when you get to a job. I remember when I graduated college and I ran into a friend I went to high school with. he had not gone to college. He instead had started working for, I can't remember if it was some type of, you know, outdoor construction or roofing type company, right? And in the 4 years I was in college, had worked himself up to a salary that I probably will never make. And he was making that at 22. Now, you know, and I remember thinking to myself, man, what have I been doing for 4 years? Well, for me, it was five because I had to go back for a fifth year. And that's really stuck with me, right? And I think of, people I worked with in retail. Worked their way up to management, store manager, assistant store manager. Now, again, it's a shaky retail climate, proven by the place I used to work, not in business anymore. But I remember hearing what some of them were making. It's a pretty good living, right? And when they got their foot in the door, maybe even before they were out of high school. But I remember, for me, and I'm not going to say my parents were, but school, I mean, when you got to high school, it was, I mean, you were made to feel if you don't go to college, you're going to be an absolute failure. Unless, you know, you go to a trade. You did have people in high school that went to a trade. I always knew what I wanted to do. Like, I always wanted to do this. And, you know, at that point, I felt, well, I need college. I need to get to college. I need to be on the college station. I need to do all this stuff. Again, I loved doing it all. And it, I think, prepared me more to be here. But like I said, then I look at people who didn't go to college and, man, you know, they were making close to six figures by the time I graduated. And by the time I was 30, some of them, I know someone who by 30 owned his own company. Not in New York anymore. He left. But still. Now, as the Pew poll goes on, roughly half say it's less important to have a four-year college degree today in order to get a well-paying job than it was 20 years ago. I think that's true. 32% say it's more important. 17% say it's as important as it was 20 years ago. I will take that back. I think there was a lot of good opportunities 20 years ago. I think it is more acceptable today for someone in education to say that there are opportunities out there even if you don't go to college. When I was in high school, you never heard that from anyone in education. If you weren't out learning a trade, you better have your applications in. Wait, you haven't gotten an application in yet? I mean, it was how I remember it 20 years ago. That's just how you were taught. I mean, they made you feel like if you did not step into a college, if you don't get your grades better going to college, what are you going to do with your life? They would tell you that. Those are things I would hear in school. I don't think that's reality, and I think it's more acceptable even for people within education today to say college is great and you should consider it. But there are other options outside of college if you don't feel college is for you. Because I don't feel college is for everybody. Again, I might have been one of those people college wasn't for. I did great in my communication classes, I think. I remember doing great in my communication classes. But I struggled in statistics. Are you kidding me? I failed math freshman year of high school. How do you think I did with math in college? There were definitely non-communication things I struggled in, right? I did great in the history of Buffalo. That was a really fun class. But outside of that in communication classes, I definitely struggled. But like I say, for me, and I think for a lot of people, I think I know I'm not just speaking for me. For me, it's a tricky question. Because if I snapped my fingers and was 18 again, and my goal was to get back to where I am now, because I love doing this. I mean, I've never been happier than I am when I'm behind a microphone. I mean, that didn't come out right. was happy when I married my wife and when my son was born. Those obviously rank higher, but you get what I'm saying, okay? For the context of the conversation. But again, maybe it's because I, lack the confidence. I don't know if I ever would have gotten into this studio if it weren't for my professor in college getting me an interview in 2009. So for me, that's why it's a tricky question. And I wouldn't say that I'm the only one. I think there's probably a lot of people who they were an intern. They got placed there through college. Like I said, I do believe I could do this job without ever stepping foot in a college classroom. But would I have had the opportunity? That's a tricky question. Let's go to John in Holland. John, how do you view this question?
You know, well, first off, happy birthday month, Beamer.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey, I got to remember it. I'm a few years older than you, and it was the exact same thing for me. In high school, it was a big push for college, and everybody was talking about it, and by the time it was said and done, of course, right, I did it too. My old man was in the trades, and he didn't really want me to go his route. You know, it was a very big push. Go get a good career, go get a good stable job, do this, do that. And I did all those things, grad school, the whole nine yards. I had a very fruitful career in public service. And at the end of the day, I work in the trades. If I turned back around time, I would have never gone to college, to be perfectly honest. I would have done what I'm good at and had, at this time in my life, been well-established. And like you said, your friends in the past, six-figure jobs, that wasn't the most common in the early 2000s for people. But I remember, mid-2000s, friends of mine that weren't even in school or in college, they're pulling down really good numbers. And I'm sitting here straddled with that debt going, I got to make all this work, right? Because we vested into it. I don't know how you feel about your son, but for our daughter, we're not pushing college. We're going to push the alternatives. You want to go to college, make sure it's something that you enjoy doing that can also pay you back. But, man, it's a completely different world out there. I really do agree, though. College is where people get doors opened and you make networks and you at least get a piece of paper that might get you in the door for an interview. I don't think it holds the same weight that it did 20 years ago.
No, not at all. But, I mean, John, like you said, I mean, when you would go to school, I mean, they would push. Oh, you got to go to college. What are you going to do if you don't go to college? My senior year, I had to pass math or I would have been held back. And all year, my advisor was asking, how's that class going? What are you going to do if you fail? What are you going to do if you miss your opportunity to go to college? I mean, that was, now again, I'm not proud that I failed math my freshman year of high school. It just, to make the point, that was putting the extra stress on me to get out that year because I did have the acceptance from Madai.
So, I don't know if this happened in your high school, but it did for me in Dubuque. I don't know if they did the aptitude test. Like, we had to take an aptitude test in 10th grade to see whether or not maybe you'd be a good fit for armed services. And that's how early I remember. It was like in the beginning of my 10th grade year. We were already talking about, what are you doing in three more years when you're getting out of high school? Are you college bound or are you going in a different direction? So it wasn't, rosy, nostalgic high school time. You look back at it and go, wow, that pressure was on you right out of the gate. Same thing. Hey, you're slipping a little bit over here. How's that going to look on your college application? And I'm like, I just started my junior year. am I supposed to be thinking about college already? But I guess I am. And it's an incredible pressure. I don't blame the current generation of kids that are in there that are second-guessing the whole thing.
No, and I will go to my experience too, John. Like, yeah, I did great in the communication classes because I can talk. But, I did struggle. And a lot of the stuff like math and outside of history of Buffalo, I did struggle. And, I question, did I really need it? I mean, again, I love that I'm here and it did get me in the door here. But overall, how much of that am I using day to day, I think is a big question. Now, again, I was also fortunate. My parents paid for my education, but I see how my wife's schooling. Now, she's a teacher, so obviously she needed it, but I know how, loans and paying back those loans, I mean, those kind of bog you down for at least a decade.
And that was my background. My background in my schooling is it's in education. So, yeah, you got to have that piece of paper here in New York, which is crazy, right? Because if you go to states like North and South Carolina, you can get by with a bachelor's and you can go be a teacher. It's always amazing to me how much different it is up here in the Northeast that we go, well, we want to saddle you with an extra $30,000 worth of graduate school debt. So that way you can, you know, in 2025, walk into a job that's going to start you at maybe $42,000 a year.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. Yep, that's why it takes 30 years to pay back student loans. You're getting a mortgage on a few pieces of paper. And God bless everybody that is a teacher. But for the people that don't want to go into those specialized career paths, and even that, there's a reason why there are less people wanting to become teachers. There's a lot of upfront costs. And sad to say, a very small amount of return when you're just looking at the dollars and cents. But, you know, if I did have to do it all over again, I really say it, I don't think I would have gone to college. I think I would have done those job fairs. I remember there being,
yes,
you know, BOCES-sponsored job fairs when I was a senior. And you could have gone and been an apprentice at an electrician's outfit. Or you could have gone and joined the IBEW. And you could have already had, by the time you're basically out of high school, an apprenticeship completed and walking in as like a journeyman. I envy the people that have spent 20 years in a career that are the same age as me, that are already looking at it going, yeah, I might work 4 or 5 more years and then go do my own thing, I don't know, part-time somewhere, because they got out early. They saw that system, they knew what they wanted, and they didn't want what college had to offer.
Amazing, amazing. John, are you also a September birthday?
No, I'm not, but my wife is. Her birthday's on Monday, so a little shout-out to my wife, Megan. Happy early birthday.
There you go, John. There you go. Well, hey, man, have a great weekend. Always appreciate the call.
Thanks, Beamer.
John in Holland. What about you? 803-0930, *930. You know, because, again, for me, now I want to make it possible. You know, I'm in the process of being more financially smart. I would like to make it possible to, if my son wants to go to college, to do what my parents did and pay for it. Because, again, if I go back, if my parents hadn't paid for my schooling, I mean, I think, and I was paying back loans now, I'd probably be looking at it even more of yeah, if I could go back, I probably wouldn't do it. So that factors into it as well. What do you think? 803-0930, *930. Do you agree with John and me? Do you agree with the Pew Research poll? Almost half say it's less important to have a 4-year degree today than it was 20 years ago. We'll talk with you after the news on WBEN. Hey, welcome back. Hour number 2 on News Radio 930 WBEN. Great to be with you on this Thursday. 803-0930, *930 gets you on the show. We're talking about college. Is it worth it? And talking about this Pew Research poll that says for almost half, 49% say it's less important to have a 4-year degree now than it was 20 years ago. Now, 47%, when asked about the money, 47% say they do believe college is worth it, but only if they could go without taking loans, and how much that is changing people's mindset when it comes to college. Let's go to Orchard Park to find Mike. Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Doing all right, man. What's your thoughts on college in 2025?
Well, I'll tell you, I think I'm a little bit older than you, but I do know what you're talking about with the pressure back in like the late 80s, early 90s, and it sounds like into the late 90s that, you know, you had to go to college, you had to have your applications in, and what are you going to do if you don't go to college? You're not going to become anything. And yeah, I was in that too, and so I wound up going to college. Got a bachelor's degree and never wound up using it. So that was 4 years that, you know, that I had to pay for college. And I wound up taking a job that I thought was going to be around for a long, long time. And that was in the automotive industry for a plant that used to be in Buffalo, one of 3 plants. And they decided to move down to Mexico. And I was too old to get into the field that I went to college for, so I went back to college again, got another degree, and when I got out of that, I learned that it really didn't pay what they were talking about. So I went to college twice, paid for college twice, and I don't use the degree that I went for. And that is a very common thing. I think you should ask callers to call in and say, well, how many people do you know that actually went to college or are actually using their degree? And I think you'll find out that it's very, very low. Yes, if you go to nursing college, you're probably going to go and be a nurse, you know. But if you did something along like business or, you know, a liberal arts degree or something like that, those are the people that I don't think are actually using their degree. You have to learn something specific. If I had to do it all over again, I would have done what the last caller said. I would have gotten into a trade, and you learn that trade, and it's good for the rest of your life. You could go anywhere. When I was at that plant, all the guys that had journeymans, there were journeymans there, and they were doing their skilled trade. They didn't care that the plant was closing and moving. They got jobs before the plant even closed. But everybody else that didn't have a skill was wondering what they were going to do. They had to start a new career. That was the biggest problem. So I would say, you know, learn a trade. Learn something that can't be done in China. You'll be great.
You know, Mike, let me ask you, what was the difference between what you thought the field was going to make and what it actually made when you went out into the field?
Yeah, sure. So I worked at the plant, and we made automotive parts, which was great. It was an old General Motors plant. It was American Axle. And so I'm like, well, I like cars. I like working with, the parts and stuff. I was very knowledgeable in it. And so I went for automotive technology, and the salaries they were talking about were salaries that you could make down south where nothing's rusted, and you can actually take stuff apart without burning it off with an oxyacetylene torch. You know, up here, you're going to get killed because everything is paid in flat rate up here. So, you know, the book says you get 2 hours to do something like a brake job. You better get it done in 2 hours. You get paid for 2 hours. But if it takes you 3-4 hours, you're still only getting paid for 2 hours. That's the problem up here. And you really couldn't make the money that they were pitching. And the other thing is that a lot of these mechanics up here that work in like shops, dealerships, they are leaving and they're getting picked up by HVAC companies because they pay more and it's a lot easier work. That's reality.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Mike, I do, as much as I love radio, but let's say this avenue wasn't here, I do wish that I was better at jobs that require, you know, my hands. I mean, I don't know anything about cars. I can't fix anything. Like, I wish I had gained those kind of skills in school, maybe gone to a trade and learned that, because I'll tell you, this radio thing fails, Mike. It's back to retail for me, and hopefully there's a job.
You'll be fine, Joe.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, man, appreciate it. Mike in Orchard Park went to college twice and is not using either degree. I know plenty of people who went to school. I mean, ironically, I know many people who went to school for this very field, communications, and didn't work a day in communications. They just wanted the college degree. And don't get me wrong, I had a great time in college. But most of that was the social aspects of college. And Tanner and I were talking during the break, and Tanner said the same thing. I mean, college really for us was more of a network, right? It was more of networking and getting to know people, knowing the right people. And let me tell you, the people who are here, I mean, all very talented, don't get me wrong. They belong here. But, I mean, it's all from who you know. And, I say this about being on this show right now. I mean, right place, right time, right? A lot of that has to do, I guess, in a lot of jobs. But to my initial question, I guess I would have to ask, because I've been going back and forth in my head, you know, was college worth it for this job? I mean, to be here, because again, I go back to, I don't think I would have gotten through the door if I didn't get an interview from my professor in college. Right. I mean, it was my college professor who got me the interview, that got me the job that I worked and got, you know, promoted and was able to work on this skill and yada, yada, yada. But overall, how necessary was college? And you know, some people will say, hey, I loved the experience of going to college and meeting new people. And that's great. Like I said, I was very fortunate. My parents paid for my schooling. And I am forever grateful to them for that. And, you know, so for me, it didn't bog me down with the years of loans. With that said, I probably would have a very more definitive answer to this question if I was still paying off loans. I mean, you go to school for so many years and have tens of thousands of dollars in loans, and then you go to your first job, and like Mike said, what are you making out of college? $35,000, $38,000? That really is not going to make a big dent in the loans that you took out. So was the pay... Now, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite here, because I do believe that loving your job is important. As someone who worked a job they hated, again, loved the people I worked with, but did not like the job, I know how that can make you feel every day, coming home exhausted, you know, just burnt out, and hating the job that you do. Like, I know how that can bring a person down. So I do think it's important to love your job. Don't get me wrong. If you can make it work financially, it's good to love your job. But if you're bogged down, if you're 18 and you're looking into a field, and now with the internet you can look and see what a job pays, not just what the not just what a spreadsheet they give you at school. Do you remember this? You'd get a sheet and it's like, well, if you go into this career, you would average $52,000 in your first 5 years. Not that. I'm talking about going to a website or websites that break down the and you have people who actually work the field and tell you what they actually make and what the income is out of college those first few years, how difficult it is to get to a certain earnings point, right? I think you have to compare that to what you need to take out and what kind of debt you're putting yourself in to go to school. You know, John mentioned it with going into teaching. Now, I love our teachers, obviously. We love our teachers. And that is something I could never do. I mean, I couldn't learn well. So obviously, I don't think I could teach well. But that is, you know, a job that it for a lot of districts takes a while to start earning, and you have to compare that, you know, those first few years in the field out of college, you've taken out almost double the debt of an average student. In your perspective, when you're 30, was that worth it? I think that's the question a lot of people are going to have to ask themselves going into school, right? Is it worth the debt that you're putting yourself in? Or, you know, do you go and learn a trade? Do you take a year off? You know, that's the sexy thing now. Take a year off and see how you feel after a year of not being in any schooling. On the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, texter says, college is somewhat worth it with student loans if you go into a field with job security. Oh, texter, another brilliant point. I didn't even job security. And that's another thing that 20 years ago, maybe that information wasn't as available online as it is today, right? Hearing from, you know, comparing a few companies in your field. What does the job security seem like? Are you going to be bouncing from job to job? That's a great point, Texter. I'll continue. But even if you're guaranteed a good paying job, if you paid for the majority of your education with loans, the benefit is deferred. I have my doctorate in nursing. I work as a nurse practitioner. I started as a nurse from RN to DNP. I took on $200,000 for student loans. Wow. My loan payment is about half my net income over 10 years. I don't know how a lot of PhDs cover the loan expense unless they get loan forgiveness by working in the public, working in public ed. And that's also, I mean, something you have to consider. A lot of things to consider when going in. You know, for me, it was, I thank my parents for me being able to have this simplicity look in 2007. For me, it was, I want to be on the radio, and this school says they can get me on the radio. It's literally what went into my thought process. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This school accepted me? What? It was, this school accepted me. Amazing. And they say they can get me on the radio. I remember, I went to, you get to tour the college, right? And I remember going to Madai. I remember going to Hilbert College. And I was really impressed with the Hilbert College campus. I just, at the time, and I don't know where it is now, I didn't feel like there was a lot going into their communications. Now, again, that was 2007 or 2006. So don't get mad at me for what I'm saying. I'm giving you my thought 20 years ago. I don't even know if they still have the communications. And I just remember, Madai and talking about the connections they had with people in the industry that were still in the industry. You know, like I said, Joanna Passeri was one of my professors. Lou Pazentitas was great. You know, you had they had a great connection with Odyssey at the time, Intercom. And that was something that they advertised on the tour of the school. And I was just really impressed by that. And like I said, I thank my parents for allowing me to have the simplicity of, I want to be on the radio. This school says they can get me on the radio. And to their credit, they did. But again, it's field by field. It's what you want to do. And that texter brings up a great point. In 2025, does the field you want to go into, is it a sustainable field? I mean, something else you have to look into, something we talked about yesterday, artificial intelligence. In 10 years, is the field you want to go into going to be depleted by artificial intelligence? That is something that you will have to consider. We didn't know about artificial intelligence much in 2007. But there's a lot of questions. Is it worth the money that you're going to be putting yourself in debt? I mean, I guess you could also look at it this way. If your parents are willing to pay for your education, if you don't go to school, how much of that money ends up in your pocket? And what can you do? What can you do at 18? Do you feel like you're prepared to go into a field and start at 18? That's another great question. I mean, invest the money that your parents are going to put into your schooling. But yeah, a lot of things you have to look into and just look into the realities. You do also have to, and you know, that might be asking a lot of 18-year-olds, but you've got to be realistic. What can you do now? And realistically, what are you going to earn when you're 22 years old? And that's another problem with, you know, when we see these demanding loan forgiveness and we see these protests and these college students that are these kids that are recently out of college and they're devastated when they look at their first paycheck, you've got to be realistic. You know, don't just look at the high end and go, this is what I'm going to earn in that field. No, you got to realize that you could graduate tomorrow with your degree and everything, yay, 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 be in $200,000 debt, and your first job is paying $27,000 or $28,000. That's a reality. You have to consider that as well, and how are you prepared for that? Something I always say, don't think you're too good to work a second job. 60% of Americans work a second job. You'll probably have to work a second job out of college. Are you prepared for that? If not, then maybe you could look into a field at 18 or a trade that you could start, you know, learning as part of your schooling and see, okay, what could I, if this field I'm going into, the average pay out of college is $31,000, what if I go into this field at 18, what will I be making at 22? That's another way to look at it. So, again, a lot of questions, but you do have to be realistic. And you can't just assume that you're going to graduate. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you have people that have engineering degrees, and they graduate and start making a boatload of money as soon as they graduate. So that's also a reality. If that's the field you want to go into, you can consider that as well. 803-0930, star 930. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back. Final segment. It's Joe Beamer on News Radio 930 WBEM. That's from the Fountains of Wayne album. I was telling John Grayson this a few weeks ago. You know, that was back in the day when a band would have one hit. You would buy the album, and that was on in the Beamer family car. It's a pretty good album. Pretty good album. Stacey's Mom, obviously a great song, but there were some other good songs, just like the New Radicals. I'm telling you, maybe you've been brainwashed too. Great album. 803-0930, Star 930 gets you on the show. We're talking about college, and the reason I brought this up is, well, we're back to school, and this is kind of a topic that I like to revisit every, you know, 6 months to a year. And a year ago, Pew Research did this poll asking about the importance of college. 49% of respondents say that it's less important than it was 20 years ago in order to get a well-paying job. But again, 47% say that it's worth it, but only if you didn't have to take out a loan. 4 in 10 Americans say a college degree is not too or not at all important in order to get a well-paying job. 35% somewhat, 25% extremely important. I don't know what happened to the other 5%. We're still looking for them. CJ is in Buffalo. CJ, thanks for holding on through the break.
Yeah, hello. I think young folks should all be educated beyond high school. It makes for a more educated electorate, and it's not necessarily a four-year degree. We definitely need more trade schools, which I am a big fan, but we have to be smart. And I wonder how many of us can pass a basic citizenship test.
Well, CJ, I'd like to say that I definitely could, but I was never good at passing any test. But I mean, CJ, to that point, I do think there are some people who decide not to go to college who are much smarter than maybe some kids like me who ended up going to college. It just wasn't an affordable option.
Well, I'm not talking about affordability. I'm just talking about just learning a little something about our history and being a good citizen.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely. I mean, everyone could be more book smart. I would argue that some people who go to college could also work on being, you know, more social and could be more street smart. Do you think that school is what you're getting at? That school should be provided, just like the first 12 grades.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your point.
You're talking about how, you know, schooling needs to be, you know, we need people to be smarter. Do you think college should be tax funded as our elementary, middle school, and high school.
Well, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? No, I'm not talking about a 4-year degree. I'm just talking about learning a little something extra. And absolutely, we need more trade schools.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that. I think we not only need more trade schools, we also need, and again, I have not been in a school building since 2007. So, if it's still like when I was in school, it was rarely mentioned, and you were made to feel like if you didn't go to college, you're starting from behind everyone else. And CJ, I would agree that, I think some people, I probably would fit into that category. Some people just aren't, college just isn't their thing. But I that doesn't mean trade school is not.
Well, it's not necessarily not being your thing. If you have a good teacher and just expand your horizons a little bit and go into the trades if that's not your thing. But I would much rather see a well-rounded electorate.
Yeah, I would always be in favor of people who are going to the polls knowing what they're voting for. I think we can agree on that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure high school really touches on that. They touch on the basics, but like I said, if you have a good teacher and or professor in college, and it's not necessarily a 4-year degree, but just to open your eyes a little bit and understand how our country works.
Yeah, to that point, this probably isn't 100% what you're talking about, CJ, but I had a teacher my senior year of high school. I won't say her name just in case she doesn't want me to say her name. And she was my government teacher. And, you might find this hard to believe, CJ. I was very outspoken conservative. And there was someone else in the class who was a very outspoken liberal. And the teacher would actually have us, discuss current events that we knew and, demonstrate that to the class. And I'm telling you, I think that was a great way. The teacher didn't let her politics get in there, but it was a great way for maybe students and kids who were 18 that didn't follow current events to see what the two major sides are bringing and what a political debate looks like.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. And unfortunately, I'm not sure all kids have that in their schools.
No, unfortunately, they don't. And I think too many people graduate not knowing, again, just knowing current events. I'm not talking about from a left or a right perspective, but too many people graduate, not paying attention to what's going on in the world. And I will agree with you, CJ, if you don't know what's going on currently, forget about history. If you don't know what's going on as you're existing, there's a problem.
They might not even understand the difference between a Republican and a Democrat, or a conservative and a liberal. And I'm not sure that kids get that in high school. They might get in college, which I hope everyone gets, but I think you have to be exposed to both sides.
CJ, that is something we definitely agree on. CJ in Buffalo, appreciate the call. 803-0930, star 930. Yes, my government teacher. I saw where she was now, like in the administrative side of things. I don't want to say her name, but she was a great teacher. And now when we weren't in class, I would bring up things again when the class was over about politics. And, let's just say her and I did not agree politically, but it's nothing she ever brought up in the classroom. And I always appreciated her for that. Unlike my my social studies teacher in sixth grade, who told us that she hopes the adults are smarter than the kids because George Bush won the kids' vote. It's funny. I at the fair, I met up with a teacher from sixth grade who I had not seen since sixth grade. And he's a listener of the station. And we were talking and he goes, you talk about that story. Who was the teacher? Well, of course, I told him. He was not surprised. But it was a great catch up. There are things I can't remember from last weekend. Well, that's not a great example because, unfortunately, I do remember Virginia Tech losing last weekend. There are things I don't remember from, you know, a few weeks ago. But I get talking to my sixth grade science and reading teacher, and oh my gosh, things just start popping back into your head. And it's like, it's as if I walked through Amherst Middle School the day before. It's just funny how that works. You know, you go from not remembering what was for breakfast that day to, oh my gosh, I feel like all these things he's talking about happened yesterday. It was 25 years ago. Let's go to Jim in Orchard Park. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Joel. I got quite a resume of college and technical schools, but when I was 16 years old, I was always working on my dad's and my mom's cars, lawnmowers, blah, blah, blah. But the guy that lived down the street, his name was Vince, he said, Jim, you ever think about working on aircraft? And I said, no. It was really the best thing I ever did. He told me about a school, Pittsburgh Institute of Aeronautics in Pittsburgh, and my parents took me there to take a look at it. I was 17 years old at the time. I graduated at 17 from high school. But it was a great school. Got my aircraft license, aircraft technician license, which is called an AMP license. And there is no technical schools like that in this area. You have to go to Pittsburgh or Spartan out west or whatever. So I did that. I worked on helicopters, airplanes. I got hired at US Air, and US Air decided to move out of the area, knock all the hangars down back in the 90s, and went from there. So I became a personnel manager at a large manufacturing plant, and because I'm kind of an A and a B sider on my brain, and actually it helped me out a lot. But I only had the associate's degree that I had from PIA. So actually went to Houghton, got my bachelor's degree. The PACE program was great. It was, you know, there's a little liberal arts in there, but I got a management degree from there. And it worked out very well. I became a vice president at the place I worked at. And, you know, it was very good. And even my daughter, when she was 16, she was working at a restaurant, and she was bringing all this cash home. Dad, look at this. Mom, look at this. And we said, no. You have to go to at least a two-year college and get started with something. So she did, and now she's a nurse practitioner.
Now, so, Jim, you went to school as you were working?
Actually, I worked at a gas station in Pittsburgh while I was going to school, working on cars. And, you know, that was a two-year degree. It was an associate's, and
you never
really
got,
helped me out.
You never got confused between the car and the airplane?
No. I'm very mechanically inclined. I've always been. As a matter of fact, I own an auto repair shop in Orchard Park now. And after I spent 30 years at the food processing plant as an HR guy, I retired. I'm 68 years old now, so maybe 8 years ago I bought this auto repair shop, and I'm still working because I can't lay down.
Retirement just wasn't your thing?
No.
Well, good for you, Jim. I do have a technical question to ask you, though. You worked on helicopters. Now, I am afraid. I'm deathly afraid of helicopters. What would you say to someone like me who's deathly afraid of helicopters as someone who worked on helicopters?
Well, actually, unless there's parts or pieces missing in flight, the helicopter could be landed with an engine failure with no problem, you know? So As long as the main rotor and the tail rotor stays on, you got a very good chance of doing what they call an auto rotation and landing safely.
Good to know. I probably still won't get on one, but good to know.
Well, you're always talking about learning how to work on cars and stuff like that, but if you want to come to my shop, and I've said this before to you, for a couple hours and just watch. Your previous caller about the rust and the rot on these cars here in Buffalo was 100% on. We have to cut bolts out. We have to, you know, if the book says 2 hours, we spend 3 hours on it, you know, and it's a crazy thing about this weather and the salt on the roads and stuff like that.
But. Well, Jim, I might take you up on just teaching me how to change my own oil. Because I feel like I could say, I don't want to put you out of business, but I feel like I could save a lot of money if I could change my own oil.
Well, actually, I would show you how to change your oil, but you'll probably never do it yourself because you have to dispose of the oil. By the time you buy the oil and the oil filter, we can change it for that same price probably.
Oh,
you know?
Well, that's
But if you want to learn how to do it, if you want to spend a couple hours in my shop and watch the guys, you know, that's fine, you know.
Jim, let's find a free weekend that I'm not traveling, and I will definitely take you up on that, my friend. Thank you so much.
Okay, I'll leave my number with you guys.
Yeah, leave it with Tanner. I'll put you on hold.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim. That is Jim in Orchard Park, and I mean he went to all types of schools. This is a topic I like always revisiting, and I really appreciate all the feedback, especially on the text board. Someone talking about dropping out of high school, getting their GED, and working in the automotive field, going from self-talk on own vehicles and books, working at an oil change shop, then to a repair shop, and working their way all the way up to a Chevy dealership. Again, just part of all of this. School, without school even in the discussion, is motivation and having that drive. That's a big part as well. Coming up next, it is Tom Bowerly, and he joins us now. Hey, Tom.
Hey, disposing of your used engine oil, I thought most people did that the same way they dispose of their old tires, side of the road, midnight.
That's how I thought I had, right on top of the Christmas tree that's still sitting there from last year.
Yeah, same way you dispose of asbestos and everything else. I mean, I don't quite understand this. All of those things, by the way, highly illegal, not to be condoned, and said for comedic purposes only. Got to make sure that the idiots don't say, they just condone that.
Of course. You know, Tom, something I didn't get to. I watch a lot of Columbo. I can't believe there was a time that they put carpet in locker rooms and bathrooms. That just, to me, is not the match.
Well, Peter Falk, one of the all-time great actors. And here's something you didn't know about Peter Falk. Did you know that he only had one eye?
I did know that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and there's an episode.
You are 99% ahead of everybody on the face of the planet.
Well, there's an episode where he says, why don't you come with me? Three eyes are better than one.
Indeed. He actually had eye cancer as a youngster, and he was monocular, as many Americans are, and was able to achieve great success only having one eye. And before Peter Falk was Columbo, you can go back and you can watch an old black and white show from God knows when called The Witness. And Peter Falk starred as Abe Reles, R-E-L-E-S, one of the hitmen for Murder Incorporated, a role he also played in the movie Murder Incorporated, but this was a TV show, and it was really well done. Peter Falk was just a phenomenal actor, Joe. Phenomenal. But I don't remember carpet. I'm not a big fan of carpet in any of its many contexts.
No, but there was an episode that the Exercise in Futility, where the guy who owns the Milo Janus, he murders one of his owners, and they go into the locker room, and there's carpet in the locker room. I was like, oh my gosh, that was a thing?
Carpet in the locker room. Yeah, that's I never saw that personally, but maybe we should just talk about naked swimming. That always gets a rise out of people. But maybe not. So coming up after 3 o'clock, we have a lot of things that we're going to get into, including this police chief in Canada is telling people who are the victims of home invaders to not resist. Don't resist. Just let them do what they want to do. Call 911, as if a home invader is going to let you get to the phone to call 911. Yeah, not resisting home invasion. You know who that didn't work out real well for? The Clutter family. You ever read Truman Capote in Cold Blood? Maybe seen the movie In Cold Blood? The Clutter family did not resist, and they all ended up dead, all 4 of them.
Yeah, I some of the talking points from these people who are supposed to be leaders, Tom, all over is just really disappointing. And this ranks right up there.
I just want to know, Canada, what is wrong with you? Canada, what is wrong with you? How do you have police chiefs who say, don't resist a home invasion? You know, people are also told on airlines, don't resist hijackers. Let them do what they want to do. That all changed after 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We started showing people how to get the cans from the cart and putting them into a blanket and hitting them over the head if you see anyone going for the cockpit.
I wouldn't hit them in the head. They're more sensitive spots to do damage.
Well, yeah, of course, but you would stop them. You do whatever you can to stop them, and you better believe me. If someone's coming into my home, Tom, I'm using whatever I have to make sure they don't get in.
I'm just going to breathe on them. Middle of the night, that should do it.
That should. Tom Bowerly, he is up next after the news with Tom Puckett. I'll talk to you tomorrow on Friday here on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.